Good evening. So, welcome to our cabinet meeting of the 16th of December. First off, I'm going to tell you that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulation 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So we start with item one, which is for apologies. We have apologies from Councillor Harper Davies. Beyond that, we have no other apologies. We go on to item two, disclosure of pecuniary and personal interests. There's one item in the pack which references the LEP. I'm a director of the LEP, so I'd like to register that as a personal interest. Other than that, are there any other disclosures that anyone wishes to make? No, shakes of heads. Thank you very much. So on to item three, which is leaders' announcements. Well, I would like to say that Charmwood has been working closely with Rushcliffe and Melton councils to support serving and former armed forces personnel in our boroughs. As part of this work, I'm proud to say that Charmwood and Rushcliffe are the first councils in the East Midlands to receive the Gold Award in the Armed Forces Covenant Employer Recognition Scheme. This Gold Award is the highest badge of honour for organisations which have signed up to the Armed Forces Covenant and shows our understanding and our support, outstanding support, for those who serve and have served. As an employer, we have introduced a guaranteed job interview scheme for veterans and raised awareness of issues facing former reservists and serving armed forces personnel and their families. We have also encouraged other organizations to sign the Armed Forces Covenant. But with partners, we are leading the way in making our society a more supportive place for members of the armed forces community. And I'd like to congratulate everyone involved in this project and the recognition that they have received. In addition, following the general election last week, I'd like to congratulate our former cabinet member, Councillor Hunt, who is no longer on cabinet, because she is now an MP for Loughborough, sitting alongside Ed Arger to represent the Charmwood Borough. So we send our good wishes to Councillor Hunt, and hope that she finds her new role satisfying and fulfilling, and we look forward to carrying on working with her as our Member of Parliament. So I now move on to item four, which is the minutes of the previous meeting. Those were 14th of November 2019. Can I check that everyone has found those minutes to be accurate and a reflection of the meeting? You can see those are. All of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Now moving on to item five, which is questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. No questions have been submitted, so we'll move on to item six, which is Charmwood Grants, round three for 2019-20. So if I can invite Julie Robinson, who's our Head of Neighbourhood Services, to the table to assist with the report. And as previously, we'll take reports as read and go straight to Cabinet questions and discussion on the report. So to start off with, I'm going to ask the lead member, Councillor Taylor, to start that process.
Thank you, Leader. This is the third round of the Community Facilities and Community Development Engagement Grant application, and just really, as you say, it's been read, but just a few things to add up. There's quite a lot of stuff coming through for the environment, which is really good to see, and also we've got quite a few new groups that keep coming forward, so it's good to see that new groups are coming forward, and that also means that we're supporting the groups that we've given grants to in the past to become more self-sufficient. So I think the grant's working really well at the moment. So that's all I have to say. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you very much. Right, do we have any questions that anyone wishes to ask? Councillor Rollins.
Thank you. Just a brief one on the proposed grant to transition Loughborough. So firstly, obviously, it's good to see more commitment to the environment, and it's good to see local charities getting involved a bit more. I just wonder, well, two questions really. I wonder whether there's any more scope for collaborative working between the officers at Charmwood that are working on our carbon neutral commitment for 2030. But also, it does seem like quite an expensive course. And I just wonder what we're going to have in place to make sure the right people are on that course, because, I mean, we'll be funding it to £80-odd pounds a head, but the total cost that they're paying is £150 per place, which for individual residents going along to me seems like quite an expensive course to run, albeit with an incredibly important meaning. So I just wondered if, or rather what mechanisms in place to make sure we're getting people on the course that can actually then put that message out to more people within the community to achieve the maximum benefit from the investment.
Thank you. As stated in the report, we thought as a grants panel it was a really positive project, something that we should be promoting and meets our objectives. As a grants panel, we had a few anomalies with the application, and we haven't been in regular discussion with them. And at paragraph 43, we have said that we want the grants panel and the volunteering community sector development officer to work with the organisation to look at how we can make it more sustainable. So rather than targeting individuals, we want to make sure that we're targeting people who can be community champions, so we can be getting the message out and having some knowledge transfer. We've also said that we'll work with the group to look at reducing the costs as well, where there's some higher costs around the periphery in terms of venue hire. So we could potentially bring the costs down, but also we want to make sure we have the most positive impact that we can.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Councillor Boker.
Thank you, Leader. I'm very pleased to see the Age UK being funded by Community Development Engagement Grant, working with schools to change plastic bottles into greenhouses. And the fact that the older people are working with the schools, I think, is brilliant, because the school children will now learn about the importance of recycling these plastic bottles. And I'd just like to say that with our new cemetery in Loughborough, we are going to do the same. So we're making some of the roads in to be made from plastic, and that's going to use up thousands of plastic bottles, and also the sort of garden furniture, benches, etc., will also be out of plastic. So more initiatives like this by the council would be very welcome.
Well put. Any other questions? No further questions. Thank you very much, Julie. So can I ask for the proposal from Councillor Taylor?
I'd like to propose the recommendations 1, 2, 3 and 4 on page 9 for the reasons 1, 2, 3 and 4 on page 10. Thank you.
And can I ask Councillor Boker to second?
I'm very happy to second that, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Julie, as well. Now move on to item 7, which is the Homelessness and Rough Sleepers Reduction Strategy 2019-2022. We have a scrutiny commission report for this, so can I ask Councillor Draycott to join us at the table? Welcome, Councillor Draycott. I think this is your first time to present the commission's report, so you're very, very welcome. Councillor Draycott, once you've had an opportunity to present the thoughts on the commission, there will then be an opportunity, if anyone has any points of clarification they wish to ask you, then there's an opportunity for that. And then I'll ask you to leave the table, and then we'll invite the officer to join us for any questions or further discussion. So over to you to present the findings of the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. As you're aware, the Scrutiny Commission considered the Homelessness and Rough Sleepers Reduction Strategy 2019 to 2022 on the 9th of December. The Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing assisted the committee. Scrutiny Committee had a number of concerns regarding this report, which is highlighted in the supplementary report that you've been given. I'd like to just headline a few of them for you. First of all, on page 27, it reported that there had been a 43% increase of homelessness cases needing temporary accommodation for 2018 to 2019. As a result of this large increase, there is now a reliance on the use of bed and breakfast accommodation. And the report also stated, as a result of that, expenditure has increased significantly. So they were the first areas of concerns for the committee. The committee then also concentrated on the reasons why people were being made homeless, and that was on page 70. One of the main reasons, and there was 92 cases of private sector landlords ending assured short-hold tenancies for that same period. The Scrutiny Committee were reassured, though, that Housing does their best and endeavours to get a 12-month tenancy rather than the 6 months wherever possible. And I'm pleased to see that I understand in the Queen's speech later this week they're actually going to strengthen and make those lengths of tenancies longer. So that should be good for the council and for people. Next, also of concern to the Scrutiny Committee, and the report states that most of those made homeless were women, and that's page 68. Not surprisingly, therefore, many children are included. And in 2018-19 again, 447 children were made homeless for a multitude of reasons, but none of their own making in Charnwood for that period. I'm sure Cabinet will agree that being homeless, even in bed and breakfast, is far from ideal for children. Uprooted from relatives, friends, their education, it's inevitable that some will have serious effects on their health and well-being. I would also raise the issue of support needs for many of those made homeless on page 69. Mental health needs were needed for a considerable number of people. A case that I'm currently dealing on is a woman that has been evicted from a family home, put in bed and breakfast, but is waiting for the County Council's Adult Services mental health team to see her, which will be some time. So she will remain in that bed and breakfast, adding to her inconvenience plus additional costs for the council. And then finally, just to say that one of the members of the Scrutiny Commission raised a question about how to access the services out of hours. And I really feel that that needs strengthening in the objectives and the actions in the report. Councillor Morgan, the first recommendation in the Scrutiny Committee report to you this evening is to support the Cabinet report, and that in line with recommendation two, I have raised Scrutiny Commission's concerns regarding the large number of children being made homeless in the borough. I would be pleased to clarify or expand on any of these matters if that is helpful to Cabinet. The Scrutiny Committee would in particular ask for the Cabinet Lead for Housing's views on any of these matters I've mentioned or what is in the report. Thank you.
Councillor Dracol, thank you very much for your report of the Commission's review of the strategy. Can I ask to start off with, are there any points of clarification or further information that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Dracol? There aren't. It was obviously a very, very clear report, so thank you very much for that. So if I can ask you to retire, and that gives us an opportunity then to discuss the paper, but can I please ask you to pass on my thanks to all of the Commission members and all of those who actually took part in reviewing the strategy. As ever, extraordinarily well worth, and we'll have an opportunity now to discuss the points that have been raised by the Commission. Thank you. So, if I can ask Alison Simmons, who's our Head of Strategic and Private Housing, to come to the table. Hopefully be able to assist with any questions that come up. And I'm going to ask now Councillor Mercer to start the next stage of questioning and statements. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. This is a very broad-ranging summary of what we do to address the problem of homelessness and of rough sleeping. In answer to two of the points made by Councillor Dracot, what I would say is that one of the reasons for the significant increase, which we have, the only way we can deal with it is through bed and breakfast, is simply because of the Homelessness Reduction Act, which has put a lot of extra stress on Charnwood and a lot of extra cost. But it's one that the challenge that the officers have risen to, and I know it's taking a huge amount of time and effort, but they're dealing with it. The second point, which I think is a very valid observation about how people get in contact with Charnwood if they have a problem at the weekend, And if they don't have access to a phone, and I think that's one which we should look at. And I think perhaps the only way is to work with other agencies to let them know if they are faced with somebody coming to them, particularly the police, who is homeless over the weekend, who doesn't know how to contact us, to actually give them the details. The report itself, as I say, covers the whole area, updates our strategy on how we deal with homelessness and rough sleeping. It emphasises partnership working, which is obviously very important. How through the new Act we are going far a lot further in giving advice and intervention at a far earlier stage, and to relieve homelessness. It emphasises our work with rough sleepers, and some members will have come out on our annual rough sleepers survey. And again, I was quite pleased that we only found three, which is the maximum we found over the past 4 years, rough sleepers, three chaps in Churchgate spending the night there. Finally, it emphasises the work that we're doing through emphasising local housing options that people have. With that in mind, I would like to present this report to Cabinet.
Thank you very much. There are a couple of points that I think you raised in those remarks, particularly about the Adult House access, and also in the Commission report, there were references to the number of children. Alison, maybe I can ask you just to sort of come back on those two points to start off with.
Okay, thank you. In relation to the out-of-hours, all the details are on our website. Anybody that comes into the office will be explained that there is an out-of-hours number and given those details. We have got a rough sleepers and beggars protocol that, again, is signed up by a number of agencies. That's Community Safety, the Police, Falcon Centre, the Bridge, etc. So the number is out there. We can do more to try and promote that, and I think one of the discussions from going around the parish council to do with rural housing is we can get some numbers on the parish council notice boards. So I can take that forward, because that was linking in with the rural housing anyway. So from that, we can promote it more, and we'll do that, and we can tweet it, etc. So we'll make sure we use all digital and paper that we can to get that out there. In relation to the number of children placed in bed and breakfast, in 2018-19, we had 257 cases of families that were helped through the process of making a homeless application. Of those, 42 cases did get placed in bed and breakfast for a period of time, which could be from 1 day, could be to 2 weeks. The council has a number of different options, and we always try these before we go to bed and breakfast. We've got Lingdale House, which is a hostel. We use our own stock. We've got an emergency bed that we've commissioned through the Falcon Centre, so that's in addition to anything else that's provided. We also operate SWEP when the weather is below freezing. What we did originally when the Homeless Reduction Act came in, we commissioned a 5-bed supported accommodation, because we knew that the cases that would be coming forward would have much more complex needs than we had been dealing with because of the change in the Act with Falcon support. So we used it as temp, but we reviewed that over the first 12 months. So we've now changed that and commissioned 10 beds, and we're now using it for prevention and relief so that we're not actually getting into a temp situation, and then we then move on from there. So we've changed in relation to the numbers of people we've had through the door, because the Act had a huge impact, 121% increase in the first year. There has been a change in gender, and there are more females, which again means there are more children, but we do everything we can so that we don't place people in bed and breakfast, because we know it's not the most appropriate accommodation. In relation to complex needs, there are outreach services that are currently provided in the city in relation to mental health. And what we're trying to do at the moment is to lobby with the Falcon Centre to try and get a similar service brought into Charnwood. So what we've tried to do is, we know we've got more complex cases, and we're trying to ensure the services are here. There are a number of services across Charnwood, from soup kitchens to the Falcon Centre, that draws people in, but we need to make sure that we have got the services and we are using the reconnection policies where applicable to ensure that Charnwood aren't becoming, a pull to more homeless people.
Thank you very much. That's quite helpful. Councillor Poland.
Thank you very much. Start by saying I thought it was a really interesting and easily acceptable report to read, so thank you very much for that. A couple of questions, if I can. Page 12 or 51, depending on the top or bottom, talks about it indicates that it's difficult to prevent or relieve homelessness in the majority of cases, even where the applicant has become homeless through no fault of their own. Does that mean we directly can't help the majority of cases, but then we would signpost them to the bridge or alternative provision? Is it that our duty is literally just to try, and if we can't? Just, I was wondering how that what happens to those people that can't, we obviously can't help directly if others didn't report.
There are three main parts to a duty now in relation to homelessness. You've got the prevention stage, where you try to keep people in the properties that they're actually in. Then you move into the relief stage, where they've already lost that accommodation, and then you're trying to find them alternative accommodation. If you fail during those periods, and both of those are up to 56 days, you then get into the main duty stage, where you then look at priority need intentionality. So before that, you're trying to prevent, you're trying to negotiate with landlords to get people to keep the landlords to keep them in there, even if they've got rent arrears, you can help build up payment plans, etc. What we've done as well is every case has to come through the council, because we have to know who we're seeing and we have to provide the advice. We have to then produce a personalised housing plan, which is then where we'd refer people through to the bridge, where they can help to support them, because they've got the Housing Matters contract for singles and families. There are been some changes in relation to that, in relation to the new contract that will be coming forward from the county. So we're always looking at that, how we can get in and do the upstream prevention. So before we even get into a prevention phase, we do see a lot of people that arrive when they've already gone through that. So this is a piece of work that we are going to really be focusing on in this strategy. We need to make sure we're dealing with people in those first 56 days, that we don't get into the relief stage. We've obviously brought in place, we've got CBC letting, so again, that's building up an engagement with landlords. We've changed the whole focus on the landlords forum about engagement, not enforcement, because we want landlords to come forward, we want them to come and talk to us and to see how we can help and support. So from that perspective, we're trying to do everything we can to stop them getting into the prevention stage by providing housing advice and assistance. But once they're in the process, we need to go within the legislation and either try and prevent, get them into relief and find them something else before we get to the main duty, because it's a lot more complicated and it's a lot more stress for the people walking through the door if they've got to go through those three different stages.
About sort of intentional versus unintentional homelessness. One of the things that surprised me actually about the report was that there were significantly more women than men. I would have thought it would have been the other way around, just from my own thoughts, which made me think, when we talk about intentional homelessness, if someone was to leave because they were in an abusive relationship, does that count as you intentionally making yourself homeless, or is that taken out? Is that taken, counted as unintentional?
That is taken out of consideration, because if you're fleeing domestic violence or harassment, then that isn't part of an intentionality decision. And one of the cases, for instance, we've had recently, and we had to place in bed and breakfast, was a single mother with six children that was fleeing from where she came from. So therefore, you've got to find her somewhere, something on that night, and bed and breakfast is often all we've got, unless we've got a property ready, available in Lingdale, in the hostel.
Just a couple of points following on from what you just said with domestic abuse. Do we actually have a women's only shelter, or is bed and breakfast the only option until they can be rehomed?
We haven't got a women's own hostel that the council runs, but there are refuges across the country where we can refer women to, and nine times out of ten you normally need to place out of area because of the risk of repercussions, but from the perspective of, do we run a hostel that is just for women? We don't. We've got Lingdale, which is a mixture. It's one and two bed unit, so that would be small families.
I was just trying to tie up what Councillor Draycott was saying about the children then are taken out of their school, you know, they're away from their schools and their friends and their support system, and maybe there could be more effective partnership working, I don't know, but I'm just trying to think of a solution for women who genuinely have to flee and safeguard their children.
Women generally that need to flee would be more safer in a refuge,
yeah.
And then it's then looking at where they could then live permanently after that.
Okay.
And you take into consideration reports from LWA and also from the police in relation to the areas that they are safe to live in the future.
And just on another point, for instance, when your car breaks down on the M1, there's an emergency phone. I'm just wondering whether we could not locate an emergency phone in a box somewhere in the town centre so that anyone who is genuinely homeless in an emergency could actually ring that number out of hours, because we can't assume that someone who has fled domestic abuse has remembered their phone, or indeed not everybody has a phone. So whilst I take on board that you have the website with all the information on, if you haven't got access to that website, then how could we not provide an emergency phone actually in a box?
We could look at that. We've also got the button, haven't we, outside the council offices that
yeah.
people can press, and again they would get through to CCTV, who would provide the information of the out-of-hours number and put them through and get somebody to contact them. I suppose where the fact that we're not just an urban area, we've got rural areas, it's how we can then replicate that across. So I'll definitely have a look at that to see how we could do that.
Thank you very much.
OK, I think I've got quite a few, actually. So Councillor Taylor, followed by Councillor Smitherich, followed by Councillor Barclay.
Thank you, Lee. Just a couple of points. What's the average amount, maximum amount, that someone would stay in bed and breakfast for? And also, have we managed to pick up any themes over the last year since the Homelessness Reduction Act's come in? Have we been able to pick up any themes of people that are becoming homeless?
In relation to how long somebody has spent in B&B, that depends on the type of accommodation that's available at any one point in time. It could be like that family that I mentioned. I think they were in for 7 days until we could find suitable other alternative accommodation, and that was to do with the size of the family. And again, it depends on, have we got a space in our hostel? Have we got some of our own stock that we can use? If it's in relation to somebody that's got high support needs, mental health needs, and we're looking at a place in our supported accommodation, is there somebody that can be moved on from there that can then go into there? So it's a juggling and a balancing act in relation to where we place people and what we've got available on the day or within a period of time that we can move people on. There is a statutory requirement that no family should be in bed and breakfast for longer than 6 weeks. And we definitely don't want them to be in there for 6 weeks, one, because of the unsuitability of it, and also because of the cost to the council. And in relation to themes, we have seen, I suppose, that the biggest change is because it's now been widened, it's no longer just priority need, and you've got more singles coming in, there's more complex mental health needs. And that is why we're looking at whether we can try and get some outreach work from the hospitals, etc., to help us, like they do in the city.
Thank you very much. Councillor Smitherich.
Thank you, Alison. I'm looking at page 51. Certainly it's an area I'm familiar with from past experience of people ending up in being homeless. But I was concerned at one of the paragraphs where it says a private sector landlord wishing to sell or relet their property was the main cause of homelessness. I appreciate landlords do sell up. But of that 15%, it goes on to say a relatively small number of homeless applicants were successfully assisted to secure accommodation in the private sector. And I wasn't sure whether the brackets of 13 related to 13 people of that 15%, or if that's a completely separate sentence. No. I think the concern that I had really was that of the people that have to, of the landlords that are reletting their property, do you find out why or who they're reletting to? Is it a case of they can earn more money from a different sector? Or is it because the person living in it is trashing the place or not taking care of it? It's sort of wondering what the reasons were in the main.
Nationally, the rainfall requirement is a certain exception to the requirement where the landlord wants to talk about either for its own family or to buy or to sell. So in relation to the number 13, that's this in reference to how many people we then house through the private sector,
right,
which is a lot lower, which is why we changed the whole ethos of the landlord's forum to try and get more landlords on board, CBC lettings with incentives, etc., to get landlords to bring their properties to us to help meet the need. In relation to what happens to the properties from the ones where Section 21 notices are served, we would, because of the work CBC teams are carrying out, they will notice if properties are coming back onto the market, and then we can also have those discussions with the landlords why they serve the notice and then relet it. But that isn't the prime objective. Our prime objective is to deal with the cases as they come in, and then to find an alternative accommodation. But if we do notice, well, we will take that forward.
That's fine, thank you.